Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, in the closing moments of the main event, Samoa Joe defending the TNT title against Darby Allin, I was thinking, all right, they're just going to put Joe over strong. It's going to be kind of a surprising finish. But Joe's got momentum. He is kind of badass. His promos have been good lately. Fans are into him. They're going to build him up for one last, I shouldn't even say last, but, you know, one more run, perhaps late in his career with all the injuries and stuff he's had, and maybe get, you know, big main event feud with him. Maybe against, you know, some of the level of Moxley or Hangman Page. They flip the script. Darby sends him into the exposed turnbuckle, hits a couple coffin drops, gets the win. And then suddenly I'm thinking, good move. Darby needs some momentum. This is a huge win. They built up Joe Strong. Darby's win really means something. They drop confetti. Sting comes out. I'm like, they've got one of their pillars, one of their young stars, back in a good spot for 2023. And then my conclusion was they could have won with either outcome. I think either path would have been good. And you know, they're going to lose something with either guy losing. But it was a fun match because I think you didn't know who was going to win or how. As the drama of the match unfolded, I think they told a good story with, and, you know, you can say, well, the formula is the heel dominates if they're going to ultimately lose, if it's a relatively even matchup. So if you're going to, you know, be that person who kind of decodes the formula of a match, you kind of might have seen it coming. I wasn't thinking that. I got wrapped up in it. How about you?
Yeah, I was right there with you. I think in my report, I put a wow as an exclamation point in my analysis. It was my first line after that match. And
how can we confirm this? You said you think you put in your report.
Oh, no, sorry. I definitely did. So,
oh, okay.
I would not hedge my written word on the internet. So, or I'll go back and edit it just to prove my point. But
I couldn't resist.
You're fine. I'm someone that, you know, for every 100,000 words, I think one exclamation point is appropriate. Beyond that is excessive. I figured you'd agree with that. But so that's not often that I do that. And so that's how I was feeling. And I couldn't agree more. I think this episode showed, you know, Starks and Darby being in strong positions, going over older talent that has been built up but can take losses. And some good booking strategy was on display to open and close the show. You know, we'll talk about the show in totality here as we go, but I think it was going to be fine either way. And I thought they'd go with Joe here as he's main evented, I think, four times in like the last 8 weeks or 10 weeks, something like that. He's been kind of a staple for them main eventing. So a big surprise, you know, in Seattle. So my brain is still WWE-ified. That doesn't necessarily guarantee a win more than anything.
Right.
But it was, I think, a good choice. And I thought it was going to be Darby loses and then you have him and Sting. You know, do you do Darby as a heel to kind of be a reclamation project for him, which is fraught on paper. So I think this is the better call for Darby at this time. But I think that's still possible down the line here. But, I think it's good. And also tells me there's probably some ROH exclusive content coming soon to Honor Club, and Joe being available for that exclusively as the ROH TV champion makes sense too. So,
yeah. When you do factor in ROH and that it is going to be the B brand for Tony Khan, I don't think that's going to be their motto, Tony Khan's B brand, but it will be. And it does make sense if Joe's going to be a centerpiece in ROH to give Darby a big win. And frankly, there's no shame in losing to Darby. It was a competitive match, and I think Joe has come out of the last month or so stronger than he was beforehand, even in losing here. I mean, good NFL teams win, good NFL teams lose. They just win more often than they lose, and Joe is fine in that role. And you're right. I mean, if he's going to be an ROH, exclusively an ROH, other than, you know, some, you know, crossover or whatever Tony might do, it makes sense. That said, if ROH wasn't a brand and Joe had won tonight, I've been impressed enough with Joe that I honestly think they could put him as a heel against Hangman Page, Brian Danielson, John Moxley in this calendar year. And fans would buy into it and he'd be credible. I think Joe has looked that good. It's been fun for there to be a bit of a renaissance in our VIP podcast vault, which is part of, which is one of the many podcast series that come with the VIP membership on our VIP podcast feed, plug. We go back 18 years, and the shows we've been putting up recently were 18 years from 18 years ago when Joe was potentially going to sign with WWE. And so it's really fun looking back at the timeline and listen back to what I was saying at the time on those early podcasts about some of the people who are around today. I've been, you know, a big advocate and fan of Joe as a standout wrestler in the ring, a distinct and believable badass personality his whole career. And I'm glad that he didn't just sort of like fade away into color commentary and then, you know, backstage coaching or whatever. People have been writing him off for years when he was in NXT. They're like, oh, he'll just be a guy who does jobs to people. And, you know, his days getting a push and being a believable main eventer are over. And that was years ago. And then he was, you know, color commentator. This is really cool that this chapter is here, and I hope he continues it in 2023 in ROH.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I think that'll be there in ROH. And, you know, we'll see how long Tony Khan can keep that separated, you know, with his top stars, you know, his Claudios, his Joes, et cetera, and Ring of Honor not being on AEW TV for, you know, a month at a time doesn't seem likely to me. So I think he'll still be a big part of AEW television as well in 2023. And I think it's well-deserved. And I think, you know, everything you're saying there is correct. And, you know, if it was the first time Joe main evented in this recent era, you know, being the last 8 weeks or whatever it's been, I was not as impressed as I was at the end here, and taking out Wardlow and building him up to then do this for Darby, I think is some smart long-term booking from Tony Khan. And, yeah, we'll see how it plays out, but I'm, you know, more bullish on the overall booking style after watching tonight's episode, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think once things kind of get settled in place with ROH and AEW and how they're going to coexist but not overlap much at all, it does give Tony Khan not a farm league, that's the wrong way to put it. It's not like the G League in the NBA or something. Or the minor leagues of hockey, but it's like this place he can pull somebody like Joe. If he has injuries or needs a fresh main eventer, he can push him and protect him at ROH, but AEW is going to be the priority. And if he needs to pull him from there, he can, you know, and I mean, that happens in the NHL when they pull from their minor league affiliate. You know, the priority should be, and I expect will be on AEW, but Joe can continue to work and Tony can try to turn ROH into a revenue stream and, you know, maybe another go round at getting a national TV deal someday. But yeah, it's fun to see Joe. And I just, the way they've featured him on promos too is the right way to feature him. You know, it's like in WWE, Ricochet has been featured better lately in some, you know, pre-recorded vignettes and where you can kind of edit and create dazzling video effects around him and edit it. And Joe's good when he's staring at that hard camera and he has a few words, but they're intense and he gets right to the point. They get in and out. And that's what they've been doing with him lately on AEW's TV shows too. From a Darby standpoint, And you know, Sting too, but mostly, you know, Sting's part of the Darby Act. What do you see for him in 2023? What does this win tell you? Is it more about just getting a belt off of Joe to set up Ring of Honor? Is it more they could have had just about, you know, anybody in the roster be the guy in the main event here who beat Joe? They chose Darby. Why was it just geography and timing, or is it a sign that Tony is thinking, yeah, let's rev up Darby again and get people talking about him as a top, you know, top 3, 4, 5, 6 babyface attraction in AEW again? Because I feel he's been not cold, but a little bit less prominent lately. That's just sort of the feeling I have. Tell me if you agree with that and what you think of tonight's, what tonight's win means.
Yeah, I think definitely cold. And that's just, you know, a lack of screen time. And I mean, I'm trying to think of his last singles victory on television. I mean, I'm sure someone is saying it right now as I ask that question, but it's not super prevalent in my mind, which is, you know, a problem for a guy you want to push at the top. So, you know, I definitely didn't think he was going to win based on that tonight, but, you know, not to, you know, dump cold water on it, but there's definitely a ceiling with Darby, and this feels pretty close to it from a, you know, if you track belts as what is the most important thing, you know, I don't think that's the end all be all, but what Ricky Starks did tonight and where he is, I think at a higher level than Darby is going to obtain at any given point within AEW. And I think that's fine, but I think it's, you know, Darby is a guy that we trust is one of our, from an AEW perspective, you know, one of our originals, as they talked about in the Britt and Jamie Hayter backstage segment tonight as kind of a theme throughout the evening. And, you know, new year, new AEW, kind of recalibrating making a OG guy who was a pillar, as you've said, you know, a champion in a vital role. And that TNT title has definitely been fraught for most of 2022 with Scorpio Sky having kind of a lackluster run, then Wardlow having a non-existent, you know, defending of it, Joe being pretty good there at the end. But, you know, we've seen Darby. It's been a good reign. Those guys, you know, Darby, Cody, the baby faces defending it on a semi-regular basis has made that belt a prominent role. But to answer your general question, I think, you know, this is could be a high watermark for Darby in AEW, and I think that's totally fine. That's a higher watermark than most people are ever going to have in AEW. So that's not to be negative. It's just kind of like if he does this and is a popular act that is, you know, the acclaimed, right? They like them in this moment could be the most popular they ever will be. I don't know if that's actually true, but it feels like Darby's in that zone where this might be just peak Darby and enjoy while it lasts for, you know, 6 months, 8 months, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Let's pause and introduce ourselves, introduce the show. We'll move on to calls and emails and more topics from tonight's Dynamite, including the rather underwhelming makeover of the entrance stage and the graphic presentation. It wasn't nothing, but it was on the low end. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 4th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the founder of Pro Wrestling Torch and PWTorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, many of them free, many of them VIP exclusive. So go VIP, everyone, to hear these shows ad and plug free, and also hear all our VIP exclusives and gain access to our unmatched library of content going back to the late 1980s, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s with some of my interviews with some of Pro Wrestling's biggest names then, and going on 2 decades of podcasts accessible on demand in our archives. So much cool stuff. Go VIP. Check it out. I think you'll like it. PWTorch.com/GoVIP for details. You can pay with PayPal, credit card, debit card. You can sign up through Patreon. You can sign up with a single click with your Apple account on your phone to get our VIP podcast right on the Apple podcast feed. All the details, all the ways to sign up at PWTorch.com/GoVIP. The other voice you hear so far is Tyler Sage from PWTorch.com. He covers AW Dynamite with a TV report alongside mine on Wednesday nights. He also is a co-star of the PW Torch YouTube channel. Search PW Torch on YouTube. Go to YouTube.com/PWTorch and subscribe. And then you can see Tyler's facial expressions as he talks. Hey, Tyler. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah, we did a live stream of Wrestle Kingdom 17 today. You can see when people win matches, you can see my reaction. So if that's interesting to you, please check it out.
Awesome. Tell people more about what's going on YouTube.
Yeah. So Zach Adorn and I are doing content there almost daily. You know, the weekends are maybe not so much, but at least daily we're doing previews of the big shows, Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, NXT. And Thursday, we have a flagship show on YouTube, which is called Fireside Chat, where Zach and I talk about the biggest news stories of the week across wrestling. And as I just said, we do live watch-alongs with a cohort of people in and out of the Torch universe and watch some of the biggest pay-per-views live. So if you want to, have a communal experience and enjoy the show live with us, like we're sitting in your living room with you, that's cool. If not, you can watch it on delay and see how wrong we were in predictions and analysis and all that fun stuff live. Because, when you're live watching something, it's not the tightest analysis sometimes, but it's fun to be there. So that's what we're doing now. We're going to expand it a big time in 2023. So look out for that. But yeah, if you are not subscribed, please go to YouTube.com/PWTorch, hit subscribe, hit that bell notification so you know when we go live every day during the week.
Excellent. All right. Let's give out the phone numbers and email and encourage people to join the program, join the conversation. You can call us right now if you're listening live at 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at PWTorch.com. We are always on the lookout for on-site correspondence. If you're attending a future Dynamite or, for that matter, Raw or SmackDown, let me know at that email address. Put the name of the city and the date and the subject line. It makes it a little easier to stay organized and be in touch with you. it's always cool to hear from people who are in the arena and give instant feedback on the crowd reaction, and also let us know what happened off air during commercials, dark matches, dark main events, that kind of thing. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Hope you're all checking out our website, pwtorch.com, also for news and columns and live TV coverage. And I was going to say, if you want to know how to live stream the show, because most of you download the show on your podcast app or stream it from our website. But if you do want to listen live, if it works out for you, you can go to wadekellerpostshow.com and click on the link to the live stream. We have a direct link to our live stream at PW Torch in my TV reports, the Keller TV reports that are posted during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Please do that. And that's the way that you can join us and call us and interact with us as the show is being recorded for distribution on our feed later on. All right, with all that business taken care of, calls and continue our march through all kinds of things that happened on Dynamite tonight, including the reveal of Saraya's partner. It's not Sasha Banks or Mercedes. It's not, probably not, but maybe it's a swerve. She announced it's Toni Storm. And we also had a Danielson-MJF segment that set up a 60-minute Iron Man match between them at AEW's next pay-per-view, assuming Danielson can beat a string of opponents over the next 4 weeks. We also had a big win for Ricky Starks over Chris Jericho, another younger wrestler who has a big upside still to come, beating a veteran who's older. That was the case in the last match. It was the case in the first match. And Jon Moxley and Hangman Page trying to tie up some loose ends, perhaps, in their storyline and set up their match at LA next week and more. So a lot to talk about. Let's go to our first caller, which is area code 346. 346, go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from tonight.
Hey, Wade and Tyler, this is Ricky from Houston.
Hey, Ricky, good to talk to you. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was a good show. The one thing that I wanted to get your opinion on that I've been thinking about for a while concerning MJF is what kind of bothers me about his character, and it's no doubt that he's talented, right? But I feel like within the narrative structure of what pro wrestling is, it's hard for me because I feel like all of his clout, for lack of a better term, is because he's a good talker. And I feel like the narrative structure of pro wrestling is winning matches, winning championships is what makes you the best, not that you know how to run down the crowd and you can talk for 20 minutes without thinking about it, you know? And I just feel like he doesn't wrestle that often, which is fine in a sense, but I just feel like a lot of his claim to be this generational talent is simply because he's a good talker.
First of all, Ricky, as a first-time caller, I believe, you had me at narrative structure, so we're off to a good start. Tyler, what do you have to say to that? Because MJF frames himself as a special attraction to get heel heat. I don't think MJF doesn't wrestle on TV a lot because he genuinely doesn't want to or thinks he'll be exposed if he does so. I think it's a strategy that Tony Khan is on board with. I mean, it's a good deal if you can get it. Obviously, his bump card is being saved, and he can have a longer career because of this happening early in his career in his 20s. But it is meant for heel heat. But do you think there's a downside to it? You know, where they're hanging a lantern on it. They're not trying to hide it, you know, and not draw attention to it. They're drawing attention to the idea that he rarely wrestles. He brags about it. It's meant to get heat, but can it backfire, as Ricky says, because, oh, this guy's a world champion, but he's just the guy who talks. He doesn't wrestle.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, I think it can. I don't think it currently is. I mean, I'm going to try and take myself out of that analysis because I think me and Ricky are more on the same page, but for different reasons, right? Like the Danielson and that whole segment tonight was interesting because, you know, Danielson shined the light on everything that is a problem with MJF that we've all said lots of times, right? The having his opponent at the pay-per-view jump through hurdles to get the match with him, which we saw again tonight, and the low-hanging fruit and the, you know, kind of roast stand-up comedian angle with the crowd, and that's kind of the whole structure of this segment, and Danielson fires back and kind of makes it enjoyable because of that. So those things, little things like that, I have more issue with than the overall structure of the character, because I think in modern, you know, wrestling, that's a good way to get heat naturally, that, you know, for people that are thinking of him as someone they see as a weekly character on TV, him being a guy who cheats all the time and never wrestles can work as a, as heel heat. And I think it does still, but it works until it doesn't. And I think that if more and more people call on a show like this, then that tells you that you are weeks and months away from the general audience feeling the same way. And it, you can lose it pretty fast. So I think it's something they got to keep an eye on as a creative unit in AEW. But I think generally for the audience, the, you know, 900,000 people that watch tonight, whatever it's going to be, I don't think it's an issue. But for me, it's more of an issue. So if that is any bit of an answer, that's kind of
what I am. What you're trying to say is Ricky is a bellwether fan, and the callers to the show are bellwether fans. All right.
No, I think you know what I mean. Everyone's very.
I wanted to jump
show,
in
I think
real
we,
quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
I also that's part of my thing too. And I feel like we're in a weird place when it comes to the state of wrestling right now. I think especially with the AEW fan base, is that blurred line between, you know, the narrative structure of wrestling, right, and shows like this, where, you know, I'm not a fan of the calling the fans marks and, you know, like even with the acclaimed music video, you're corny, like all of those things is like, that takes me out of the structure of what we're looking at, of what we're supposed to be immersing ourselves in. So, like, for example, you know, with Roman Reigns, I can be cool with him not wrestling as often because he's beaten The Undertaker. He's beaten Brock Lesnar. He's done these things. He's been wrestling. He's been competing for all these years to where now he is this big attraction star, where seeing him once in a blue moon is an attraction because he has built up this reputation as a big star, not just because, oh, yeah, I can say these zingers, you know, and I can, you know, like you said, the low-hanging fruit, and that's what my stardom is based off of. And it comes across kind of showy to me at times. And you know, that's just my take on it. I mean, I don't disagree that he's a good talent, but I just feel like those little things, especially with the AEW fan base, for me, it's not for me when it comes to the, you know, using the insider terms and stuff like that, where a casual person tuning in is not going to know what mark means or what, you know, so it kind of takes me out of it.
MJF's promos are a product of his age, his generation, his upbringing, and also the fact that he is, you know, a guy who follows the wrestling media. He follows social media. He knows what's being said about him. He, you know, took a dig at Bryan Danielson being a wrestling journalist favorite, and that's what, you know, he hangs his hat on more than, you know, holding a title, like he, MJF does. And he incorporates that stuff in. I think he thinks strategically that it does connect with the AEW audience. But Ricky, I think you make a good point that we found out the AEW audience after 3+ years is around 1 million people. And that counts, you know, the 7-day viewership totals that we run from time to time, not just the same night, the live and same night viewership. And you know, if they want to grow, you have to watch how often it seems like this is a clubhouse. And if you're a casual fan, you don't have access, or you're late to the party and don't get the jokes. Don't get the references, and you know, they have to be cognizant of that. And I think there's a balance to be struck. I think MJF has gone too far in that direction at times. I didn't think tonight was an example of going too far down that road. You know, the fact is Danielson is highly regarded, and if you're MJF and you want to come across as a heel who's pretending you're not insecure over the fact that you don't have the type of respect that Danielson does, because I think the core of MJF's character is he wants to be respected. But he doesn't want to put in the work that people, the workhorses like Danielson and Moxley are doing, and that's where the heat comes from. Danielson, that was basically Danielson's retort, is I'll go put in the work. But in the end, that work that you're putting me through to earn my title shot, doing it your way, means I'm going to have an advantage because I'm going to be in ring shape and you're not for my stipulation, which is an Iron Man 60-minute match. And so you have the babyface outsmarting the heel. I can buy into the mindset and the motivations and therefore the logical actions of both MJF and Danielson in this promo. It makes sense. Tyler, where do you think MJF is landing on balancing contemporary insider references and clubhouse terms or jargon and that kind of thing? Does he go too far? Not far enough? Does it vary? Where are you on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a week-by-week basis. I think this week I would probably put in the tally of a little too much. I think Danielson really leveled out this promo in general, like him interacting with it. Like, to me as a viewer, signified like, hey, we're all having fun. This is fine. And then it kind of got serious at the end there and called out the man behind the curtain aspect of the MJF characters, I think worked here. But yeah, I mean, the calling him a mark and all that stuff this week, I think was a little much, but MJF usually course corrects, overdoing it on things like this. And I think that's why his character works more often than not, because he doesn't just keep laying in the same stuff week over week. It'll change. And then, you know, in 5 weeks, we might see a similar performance like this. But for me right now, it's you know, I think it's still a green flag. It's not even a yellow flag situation here for it. But just something that, like, when if MJF were to fully indulge in this character, I think it can go off the rails relatively quickly. And, you know, the reaction from the crowd tonight is more an indication of it working than it not working, based on how hot that crowd was for mostly everything. I think if you're Tony Khan, you're super happy about that. But, yeah, you know, they ate it up the way that MJF and Tony Khan and Danielson wanted it to be received. So I think that's a positive sign for the, you know, whether I loved every bit of it or not, I think it worked for the general fan.
And I'll add, too, one of the keys for MJF's gimmick working and not backfiring is that when he does have matches, he delivers, and he has. You know, I mean, he shows up in shape. He wrestles hard. He wrestles crisp. He wrestles smart. And they're really good matches. And so if it's, you know, I mean, he'd say it's like fine dining versus fast food. There's, you know, you can go to Subway and Chipotle and, you know, Burger King a lot and afford it perhaps. But, you know, when you want to spend, you know, $100+ on a meal out, you know, with a couple people, you don't do that a lot, but it's worth it infrequently, because it's better. It's better ingredients, better food, better environment. MJF would say he's the fine dining of pro wrestling matches. It's not something you do every day, every week, but when it happens, it's high end. And, you know, that's, you know, plays off his whole thing of mid too. You know, everybody's mid and he's not. So Ricky, back to you for any follow-up on anything that we've had to say.
Yeah, I agree with y'all overall. I would just like to see more emphasis on, like I said, within the narrative of wrestling. You know, you win titles by winning matches, not because you're a good talker, you know. But other than that, that's pretty much it. That's really my biggest thing. So I'll let you guys get to other callers.
Cool. Great. Thanks, Ricky. Call again.
Yes, sir.
All right, 347-215-8558 is our number. 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 on your keypad when you call, so we know that you want to be brought on the show. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. A reminder, the email as the show progresses. If you don't want to call but you want to react to anything we're saying, that's the best way to do it. All right, up next, Chris in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland joins us. Chris, welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Good.
I got to say, I thought this was exactly what Dynamite needed to start off the open inverted commas, new era, close inverted commas. I know, Wade, you're not entirely happy with the set redesign, but I really thought that entranceway sort of upped the production value a bit. The crowd seemed a lot better lit as well. And either the crowd was absolutely molten all night, or they've put extra mics in the crowd, because what an atmosphere in that building tonight. I want to start with
AEW could only go, if every week Dynamite could be in a major city they've never been to before, that would be great for the brand, you know, and because, I mean, it was a red hot crowd, you know, I mean, it really was. And it was a great way to start the new year off. I don't know how strategic it was to, like, start the new year off in a market like this, but when AEW has and this was a good show, by the way. This was a good episode of Dynamite start to finish. And for reasons that we haven't gotten into yet, but we will as the show progresses. But when the crowd is into AEW, it really helps. Now, part of the reason the crowd is into it is they put wrestlers who are over, who fans wanted to see in good situations tonight. But part of it is, it's one hand washes the other. I mean, it enhances the show when the crowd reacts the way that they did. So that definitely added to it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I think really the only way they could get a better crowd would be if they went to Chicago and debuted CM Punk. But I believe they might have tried that. I don't think that worked out so great. The opening segment, I don't use this phrase very often, but I thought that was the absolute perfect way to start the show. It wasn't a perfect match, wasn't five stars or anything, but you had a believable threat to Ricky Starks. There has been some wondering about his contract status. I think, was it Jason you were talking to about that, Wade, this week? You weren't sure if he had re-signed or not. And there was a chance there, especially with the interference, that you thought, okay, well, Starks loses here, and then he's going to pack his bags and he'll be in the Rumble. But no, they went with the win. The crowd was into the match the whole way. It was just brilliant. Like, Jericho, as much as I dislike the man for various reasons, just continues to show why he sticks around this business. He is the modern-day Jeff Jarrett, really, although I guess arguably Jeff Jarrett is the modern-day Jeff Jarrett. I just wondered, A, what you thought of that segment as a whole, and B, what was the crowd chanting at Jericho early on in the match? Because I could not pick it out.
Tyler, I'll let you start on that.
Yeah, I was trying to pick it out too, so I could not hear it. You could hear most of the rest of the show pretty clearly what they were saying, and I didn't get it there. I'm sure someone... another caller knows, please let us know. But yeah, I thought it was a great way to start the show. It seemed like with Joe main eventing so much, it seemed like that was going to open and the Joe match was going to close. So yeah, and I had more confidence that they were going to go with Ricky just with how much they've given him in recent weeks and months. But it's a good sign for him being there more longer term. And I think the next shoe to drop on that front is FTR, but we can talk about that with that segment. But yeah, I thought it was great. And I'm enjoying this Jericho character of him on the downside and him putting people over along the way. It's a very intelligent way to tell a story with a legacy act and also get people over along the way of the story. And I think it's just, fantastic thus far. And it's another, one of the 15th best character Jericho's done that we'll go back and look at his career. But yeah, I thought it was a great way to open. And I totally agree. Not a perfect match. It felt like a safe, good WWE match, but I don't think that's always a negative. And I think getting that match and getting that result and Starks winning the way he did is more important than having, a Death Valley driver under the apron.
I like that Starks won. Jericho is passing, he's giving a rub, he's passing the torch, he's doing whatever. It's important for AEW to show that when fans get behind someone, the momentum will continue through strong booking. And that, I've talked about wanting Paul Levesque and WWE to exhibit brave booking, where you have top-level wrestlers facing each other and you do a finish. And it's not a finish that has a bunch of asterisks and shenanigans and ifs, ands, or buts. But, a win, it doesn't mean you can't have some of that, but you want it to feel like the person who won accomplished something. And Starks did. It felt that way. And overall, in a big arc, in a more macro sense, it feels like Starks is on the rise. And that he's in a meta sense, fans are sensing Tony Khan's behind him, so they can get behind him more. And as long as Starks delivers on the mic and in the ring, and then the booking also puts wind at his sails, that's how you get the most out of somebody who seems to have a chance to move up the card or become a bigger star. And I think we're seeing that happening right now. And I like the first segment. Yeah, it wasn't a great in-ring match, but it was good. And it's what you would want and expect from those two in that context. Anything else, Chris?
Oh, yeah. There's going to be so many fines levied tonight for swearing. I mean, that acclaimed segment and the Moxley Hangman Page stuff, I think the FCC is going to be pretty rich by the end of this. Do we know what Kurt Angle's contract status is, either with WWE or in general? Because I thought originally it was just a coincidence, but tonight, having seen Max Caster either being the most brilliant cheap shot artist in the history of the universe with the angle slam and then the hop and then the ankle lock in addition to another wrap line, is there any chance Kurt Angle does a one-off? Are they going to Pittsburgh anytime soon? Like, do we know if that's possible at all?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if he's on a Legends deal that would prohibit it.
I think he is, but I don't know, how long that goes for, right? So, very tepidly, I think he's on a Legends contract contribution.
and from talking to some Legends, and I don't think it's like a secret. If you're on a Legends deal, you can't work on it. You can't appear at a nationally televised, you can't make appearances for the company on or off camera if that company is nationally televised. And so, you can go to a trade show, sign autographs, go to a local indie show, but you can't do AW. So I don't know. But yeah, it seems like they're building that up, and they did not run from it. The Rich Fan and I talked about the Karen Angle thing on the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade, earlier this week. And that got heated. And, you could say, oh, it's a work. Karen Jarrett is playing into it, except that's her. it's so believable. It doesn't feel like an angle. But they didn't run from it, and that's part of Caster's brand, is he doesn't run from controversy. If he senses something is getting under someone's skin, he's just going to lay it on thicker. That was a fun wrap on the way to the ring. Tyler, how did you feel about the brouhaha with Karen's reaction to last week and then what they did to lean into it this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything around it is what you said, Caster's, specialty, right? And it's everything that I would have expected if you were to lay out, hey, someone raps about Kurt Angle about Jeff Jarrett, like what's going to happen? Like I would agree with this line of what happened. That's probably the most likely outcome. But when it comes to the in ring itself, we got at the very beginning with Jarrett, popping Caster, and it looked, Jarrett's very good at making stuff look pretty real in the ring, and I think that's one of his best assets right now. Is he looks like a guy who's like angry and crazy enough to actually, do like a fake shoot move on a guy in the ring and kind of take it into his own hands, which I don't think is, the truth. But it didn't deliver on that. And obviously that was then cleaned up when them having another match on Friday. But I would have liked to see even more of it in this match, because Caster and Jarrett did not touch very much at all here. And so, I don't know if we want to talk about that match itself right here, but
sure. Yeah.
I mean, that was, from all the positive notes we gave at the beginning segment and the last segment, I think this was just a convoluted mess of a total segment with all the refs, all the stuff, all the dusty finish, all that sort of stuff was some of the most clumsy Jeff Jarrett type booking I've seen in a long time in AEW. And it felt like it was on a different show. And they were showing it on AEW to show you how like a bad wrestling show goes.
It's the Jeff Jarrett specialty. I mean, this is he did this in TNA for years. I mean, his match finishes for his matches that he was the producer for, the agent for. It's like, hey, here's a good idea, and here's another one, and here's another one, and here's three more. And instead of doing them over six matches, let's fit them all into 3 minutes at the end of this match. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's his approach, and I mean, if the crowd is reacting to it, I think it validates Jeff doing it. You can't do it in every match. I think it's too much. But I didn't think it was a disaster. But, yeah, you watch it and you kind of shake your head, Jeff not having any restraint. I don't know what the motivation is, if he just genuinely thinks that's the best way to do things. But in TNA, when he was the booker and it was happening all the time, not just in his matches, like it was so often, it was a convoluted mess so often. I go back to that example, and I wish I had a clip to remind myself of the exact circumstances, but there was a time on Raw where Bret Hart was color commentator, sitting next to Vince McMahon. So this was early on. and there was an angle going, there was a match going on, and then somebody came to ringside, and then someone else came to ringside, and there was a ref bump, and then two other people ran to ringside, and Brett just, like, broke character and looked at Vince and said, you just keep adding ingredients to the soup, don't you? and it was just this classic, you know, is classic Bret Hart, if you know Bret's personality in his relationship with Vince. He was just chuckling because he wasn't clued into what was happening. He just was reacting on the spot. And that's how I feel with Jeff. It's just like, oh, okay. Oh, that's right. This is Jeff Jarrett match. He's going to do this. Oh, still this? Oh, and that wasn't the finish? Oh, yeah. It's like every time. And it just, yeah. So I don't know if Jeff's self-aware or not, how much it stands out.
It's funny because I thought, Wade, you would actually quite like how they straightened their tie on that finish, because you had a reason for all the other refs to be out there and overturn the call because they were all
yes.
holding back Satnam Singh. And it made sense. I mean, it's Attitude Era at its best, right? This is what you saw at the end of every big Attitude Era event.
And if you notice, Chris, I'm not trashing it. I am trying to take a measured – I'm in a measured way saying it's classic Jeff Jarrett. And you kind of shake your head at how it just – it's always that. This was not the worst example of it in that sense that – and you're right. I mean, the I don't know if it's a straighten your tie moment, but I appreciate you bringing that up. In a way, I guess in a way it is. In that, you know, why were the referees there to reverse the decision in a tag match? And I was even thinking, this will sound really dated, but I still remember growing up reading the newsstand magazines, and Pro Wrestling Illustrated would have their annual article. There should be two referees for every tag match. There's too many shenanigans, too many bad decisions.
Every time.
And yes, we need to have two referees for tag matches. And they'd pull promoters, and they would do this whole work, you know, thing that PWI did back in the day. You know, we pulled promote. Why don't they do it? They should do it. And this was a case where, because all these referees came out to make sure Satnam Singh left, they happened to be there to see the cheating, you know, which does sort of prompt the question, why don't they just always have two referees there to catch the cheating? but no, I mean, there was part of me that was like, this is way too much. And then, like you said, part of me that's like, ah, that was kind of clever in the end.
I mean, they got me. I thought they were going to leave the titles on Jarrett and Lethal, and my finger was over the button to change the channel. They got me, and just what we're talking about.
They played the music and celebrated. They went all in.
That means it's done. There was a sign in the crowd that said, "I paid money to see Jeff Jarrett." Said nobody ever, and I'm like, "All right, can we just take that sign to every show for the rest of the year?"
Wow.
Oh God.
I want to see Jeff's reaction when he reads that. Like, does his heart sink and he looks sad, or does he laugh and point and go, "Ha ha, I'm here making money."
Heat, right? That's what he wanted. Real quick, I want to talk about the Danielson MJF thing. I really wish somebody would just say to Bryan Danielson, you need to stop booking and just wrestle, and you'll wrestle who we tell you and not you who you want to wrestle, because I don't need to see him against Tony Nese. I need to see him against people that are actually a threat to him. But that segment, I'm so torn on it. Like, I can do without the mother jokes, especially from Bryan Danielson, who telling the joke, looks like a 12-year-old, or not even a 12-year-old, a 6-year-old saying the word fart in front of his mother for the first time. He's just got that goofy grin on his face like he's just getting away with murder. Also, there is absolutely no reason for Danielson to agree to this, because here's what I do if I'm MJF. Next week on Dynamite, as soon as the bell rings, I walk into the ring, I low blow Danielson's opponent, and now I don't have to face him. Done. Finished. Over with. Why are we even talking about this? It's a silly way to do it. But I also really don't want to see MJF wrestle for an hour. But the delivery from both guys, I thought, with putting aside the puerile humor, I thought it was a good delivery. I thought Danielson showed more desire to actually destroy MJF than he has done with anything else. He really brought some emotion into it after he finished being silly. And MJF showing a touch of the limber tail, as JR would say, also I think really adds to him being a true heel. And he's done a really good job of turning the crowd off him, which I thought was going to be his biggest challenge as champ. So I don't know. I'm sort of torn on this segment. I'm wondering which way you guys are leaning.
Well, first, I just try to keep track of a few points I wanted to make as you were talking there, because there's a lot to this segment. I'm not sure what MJF's mom did to be a fair target for Bryan Danielson. Like, if MJF's mom had come on TV and said, I have the best son, he is the best boy, he would never cheat, he is the most honorable person, okay, maybe it's fair game to say that she slept with everybody in the Seattle region. It did feel a little bit heelish or a little out of bounds to just, you know, flip over to not making fun of MJF, but making fun of his mom. I don't think there's a ton of people in the crowd thinking that. They were just kind of wrapped up in the moment, but it crossed my mind. So I'd say that. Yeah, there's obviously loopholes in the stipulation. And, you know, MJF's got to be careful he doesn't just come across as, you know, like that he going back to this. I don't know. I mean, in his mind, he might think that's kind of his thing. Like, I issue a challenge. You have to go through this gauntlet of my challenges to get a title shot at me. Maybe he doesn't care if that's a thing he's known for, but it is a thing he's getting to be known for. And then you don't want to have, you know, obvious loopholes where it just seems kind of phony. I think they are happy with how they explained it, in the sense that Danielson at first was like, no way, I'm not going to just do things your way, I don't answer to you. But then if you let me pick the stipulation for the title match, then I'm game. And he sort of, you know, goaded MJF into giving him something in return. So the babyface didn't give up something without getting something in return. And so in my mind, I'm like nodding along and praising that, because they don't always do that in these similar situations in wrestling. So I think they were trying to cover for that by saying, why would Danielson agree to this? Well, ultimately, because he thinks he can out-wrestle MJF in an hour and embarrass him. And so he ended up outsmarting the heel. And Danielson, meanwhile, is like, bring it on. I'll take on whatever you got for me in the next 4 weeks anyway. Tyler, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, just on the promo itself, the use of the word human suitors, as many times as they said it, I thought was the strangest way to ever convey that message of, like, their mom sleeping with goats or sleeping with people in the crowd. You could just say sleeping with. Like, well, while in that same segment, the crowd is chanting, shut the F up, multiple times, it just was a very strange juxtaposition, I thought, in, like, the very, like, PG writing and safety there. So that was strange. I just want to make sure I got that in. But, yeah, I think the whole thing with MJF doing the gauntlet style to get through there, and them being so open and so breaking the fourth wall here on this, and just being like, yeah, well, none of that matters, we'll do it anyway, is MJF, you know, like we talked about earlier with the caller, Ricky, and it was just like, I think that's him trying to get heat in every way possible. He wants me on this show to complain about how that is now, you know, we just talked about the dusty finish, and now we have the MJF, you know, pay-per-view setup, right? It's its own subgenre of wrestling, and he's made that, and we're tired of it, and that's why, you know, he needs to go away, and he's getting heel heat in that way, and he's getting heel heat on TV, and, you know, to give into it, I think that could be a pretty big problem for him down the line. It just, to me, is, you know, I think we all don't think that Bryan Danielson is walking out of that pay-per-view as the AEW champion, so this just kind of, to me, you can see the structure of the MJF long title run right in front of your face. And yeah, I don't think it's being hidden as well as it probably should be, because that's kind of my mindset as a viewer. It's like, okay, well, he's going to get through Danielson, and then probably going to go through at least two other giant contenders, and then maybe he can then lose at that point. It feels like, you know, we're in a match and Danielson is the first near fall that is not actually going to be the pinfall. We have to wait for one or two more moves. And I don't really love that as a viewer, that I kind of know that and it's open right there in my face. But so that would be my biggest complaint from a big picture view of this whole MJF character at the moment.
All right, cool. Yeah, Chris, back to you.
Yeah, he did. MJF did make reference to the fact that he's the guy who throws up obstacles in the way of people. And I think also couching it as, you know, Danielson, your record isn't great recently. You need to be the number one contender, and right now you're not, so make yourself one. I think that kind of adds even more value to what they're doing. I really hate the fact that MJF can just stop him at will, and I don't know, it bugged me.
Chris, I'll insert here too, because this is an example of them coming up with, thinking, what are things that are missing for promos logic-wise that we're going to inject? And like MJF, and I don't love when they do this, because it does sort of draw attention to something and it still feels sort of orchestrated. But MJF said, you know, I knew you'd try to make my life miserable. You would be obsessed with me. So I talked to Tony earlier and anticipated this conversation. And I got him to agree that since you don't have a great record lately, you'd have to do this to earn the title shot that you want against me. it's expository, and it maybe involves a little bit too much of a prediction of what's to come. So you have to watch it carefully. I think it worked, and it's better because I think the alternative is worse, Chris, which is MJF just dictating without Tony Khan's authority, authorizing
sure.
it. So MJF's like, I know you've been obsessed with me. I went to Tony, and I said, hey, if this guy wants a title shot, I have this idea. He's got to earn it. MJF, in his mind, is confident he won't earn it. He'll come up short because he's been losing lately, and that's his way to seem like a stand-up guy to Tony Khan, his boss, willing to defend the title against a guy like Danielson, but only if Danielson earns it the way that Tony Khan would think any challenger should earn it. I can talk myself into thinking that's a better approach than the alternative, which is just MJF going, if you want a title shot, I'm dictating this is how. Because who is he to say that? He's not the promoter.
They could have made it fine by me by adding in one line with Danielson saying, I have two conditions. The first is you don't interfere in any of the matches, and also that I get to pick the stipulation. And then
there
we're
go.
Good. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm. it's
good.
Definitely going to be
where were you at the meeting?
Appropriate.
They could have used you at 4 or 5 p.m.
Oh, they can't afford me, Wade. They can't afford me. Just a couple of quick points.
There you go.
And
I bet Tony
I let
could,
you move
I bet,
on.
To be honest.
Oh, yeah, okay, maybe he could. I'm pretty sure they're telegraphing that Shida is going to attack Tony, and then Mercedes Moné, for the love of God, please put that accent the right way around before my bilingual speaking rear end gets mad at you. The way they have that accent does not make that sound, and it's going to drive me insane. Also, interesting point, I think this is the first time in the history of the company that every single title is on a homegrown talent, with the exception of one-third of the trio's titles. And I think that is a signal. I think that says something. So I noticed that today with the change from Joe. Every AEW title, I mean, Pac has one of the six-man, but we know that's going to change soon. Every other title is on a homegrown talent. So that could be telling us that they're trying to move away now from all ex-WWE with AEW.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to be cognizant of that as a thing, but I wouldn't want them to move away from something that was working just because somebody's an ex-WWE guy or the ratio is too high. Mm-hmm. But if all things are equal, or, if you need to kind of go, wait a second, we are getting a little too wrapped up in people who were big names before they got here, and we need to turn our attention inward to people who we're not paying enough attention to, who have more of an upside, I'm for that. I don't, as a rule, think they need to do that, but if thinking they ought to do that leads to them getting the most out of their homegrown guys, then I'm for it. So, and I just think in the ebb and flow of things, you want that to be part of what you do with your championships. You don't want there to not be an ebb and flow, and it's just clear it's the ex-WWE guys, or the New Japan headliners who get titles and not the people who weren't known 4 years ago nationally.
I agree. I don't think they have to.
Tyler, is there anything you want to say about anything that Chris said?
I agree 100% with the Shida attacking Toni Storm and, doing a Nancy Kerrigan sort of situation to her. And then Mercedes comes out and it seems about as obvious swerve as I could see in AEW. So I just want to make sure I agree with that. But yeah, it's interesting. I think 2023, yeah, definitely maybe Tony Khan had a New Year's resolution to do better by his AEW homegrown talent. So we'll see what happens there.
What if Tony Khan was like, everyone's speculating that Sasha Banks is going to be, by the way, I love Sasha on her Twitter that she puts Sasha Banks, or WWE : Sasha Banks, and then her movie name also as her way to legally say, I've played these two characters, this one in the movie and this one in that other wrestling company, but now I'm this. And it's her way around. If she just goes FKA Sasha Banks, then WWE can be like, hey, you can't say that. But she's just going, hey, this is who I am. Here's two roles I played, one in wrestling, one in movies. Anyway, that said, what if Tony Khan's like, oh, man, everyone's speculating that Sasha Banks is going to be the mystery partner. They're going to be so disappointed when it's Toni Storm. I'm going to reveal now it's Toni Storm so that we stop all the speculation about Sasha. And it totally backfires. I'm just putting that out there just in case. It's actually going to be Toni Storm, and it's just to set up an angle with Shida. But I think you're probably right. But, until it happens, there is that other possibility. By the way, I thought Saraya was a real jerk Kushida. That was like, yep. Just like, I'm sitting next to the best wrestler. And then she turns her back to Sheeta, just like, it's you. And I'm like, I'm not on Saraya and Tony Storm's side on this one, if I'm just a casual objective viewer of that, how that played out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sheeta should attack Saraya. It should be Tony Storm, yeah. and Mercedes should be the match, but we'll see what happens. It's not as much star power, so.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think I will leave you there. I've been up since 3 o'clock watching Wrestle Kingdom, so I am absolutely exhausted. Yeah, and I have to work tomorrow, so you know why not. But thanks as always for taking my call, and take it easy, gents. Have a good one.
Thanks, Chris. All right, we're gonna go to Jay. He unclicked. Jay, if you meant to unclick, that's fine. But push one again if you do want to be on the show. Or if you just had to step away, that's cool. We'll go to Don in St. Louis next. Don, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, I feel like tonight was a good show. I feel like the staging was very good, and I feel like it's taking more of a mainstream look. Less dingy and grunge look, but more corporate America. What do you think?
Don, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. Just repeat what you said.
I'm saying, do you think tonight stepping away from the indie look and more into that WWE mainstream look that might appeal more to the casual fans?
I don't think so, because I don't think either look, the former look or the current look, is markedly, one was definitely WWE and one wasn't. I don't know. I mean, I was let down because I just don't think they changed enough. You know, I mean, they changed the set. Which it needed, and you know, the red and the blue lights and getting rid of the babyface heel tunnel is nice. I don't know if they're still going to do the left right thing coming out from the behind the screens in the same way, but it's less obvious. And then they had in that nice arena the ribbon boards, as they call them, between the decks, you know, decked out in the red and blue lighting. But then the camera went to the ring, and it's the same kind of dark drab golden black ring apron and a barricade panels, and it just didn't match. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like redoing your kitchen, but just changing the granite, but not the floors. And then the floors and granite don't match. Like, I didn't get it. I tweeted out, like, has the new ring apron not arrived? Like, is it delayed because of snowstorms or something? Like, it just felt half done. It doesn't feel like a makeover. It wasn't enough. I don't think they should have mentioned it if this is all they were going to do. And now there's no cohesion. I don't know. I mean, NXT kind of did it too, where it's like, well, we're kind of changing our logo, but we're also not changing the splash of color, but we're going back to the black and gold. It's like, you can't do that. You can't wear black shoes and white socks. I think that's a rule. I don't know. Fashion is not my thing. But like, there's just things you don't do or you have to do for a makeover to be complete. And this just felt half-assed and half-budgeted. So, I mean, I liked the new stage. It didn't feel too WWE-like to me. It just felt like a refresh. And again, I mean, there's things WWE does well. And if AEW, you know, does certain things, if it's done well, but it conjures up, oh, they're trying to be a like WWE, that can be a bad thing, even if on its own it's good. But that didn't jump out to me in that way. I was more just hung up on the idea that they didn't actually update the ring apron and in ringside area. They did the graphics package, which is fine. But they didn't change anything else about anything, you know? I mean, it just wasn't enough to feel like, you know, as Excalibur said, a new era, unless it was a reference to, you know, the booking changes or something like that. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. As soon as the show started and I heard, you know, light the fuse, bring the boom, that entrance song didn't change. Yep. It's like, oh, yep, not much is changing here. Because I really thought, like, that would be a whole refresh if you had different music or if rock, what's it, Round Ball Rock, is that what that song's called? Like, if that opened the show, like, it would be weird, but it's like, well, hey, they made a choice and it's a little different. And it feels like it was, like, 70% in the opening graphics and the graphics for the commercials around the show and what you're going to see on TNT when you're watching an NBA game. Like, that is the rebrand more so than what you see actually on the product, which is not super ideal. And also when it comes to, like, I thought the lighting was way better tonight, but also they were in a brand new arena where the Seattle Kraken play. And that's usually arena they only are booked during a pay-per-view. So very curious when they're in a, you know, they're at the Nutter Center in Dayton on February 1st. That's the actual name of the arena. I'm not making that
it
up.
It is. No,
so,
I know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
been,
okay.
It's been around forever.
Yeah. Name too. But, yeah, so when they're in the Nutter Center, and that place is a dive. I've been there many times. So when if it looks the same way, then I'll give it more credence here. But, yeah, I mean, it's a facelift. It's a refresh. It's not much more than that. And I hate to disappoint you, Wade, but Samoa Joe came out the left side and Darby came out the right side of that screen. So it's not changing. So, but you know, it's totally fine, but underwhelming for what like was, you know, what all the promos were for. Like, so yeah, I think that was a disappointing thing in general for what I expected as well.
And if you're at this amazing architectural venue that's so distinct and it's new and it's this major, major arena and it's the beginning of the new year and it's a new era and you can't get a camera guy outside to shoot the scene of fans arriving at the building. Like, it's just, that's not like some weird thing to say. Everyone does it. Every local NHL game I watch on Bally Sports, they show the fans arriving at the building. It's so cool. It makes me think I'm sort of, you know, reminds me of when I go to the games and I'm walking up to that same entrance. When I watch, you know, the national games and they show the outside of the stadium and it's like we're not just getting some stock postcard shot of the skyline. You're actually getting to see the fans arriving and it sets the scene and it's obviously not Tony's forte. It's not something that crosses his mind. He just wants, you know, he's more into other things about wrestling, but get someone in there to do that. And when you're working for TBS and TNT, and they're doing this for their other sports leagues, and you're leaving half of the production touches undone. Why isn't there someone from TBS and TNT sending a memo going, let's do this better? You know, there's some things that you can do, and it's not just that. I was hoping they would change the way that they promoted next week's shows. You know, the Rampage and Dynamite, and it was the same thing of Excalibur, FedEx Man, speed reading through a bunch of stuff. This was a time to say, you know what, we had our way of doing things. We can't constantly be changing the way we do things, but we periodically reassess how we do things and brainstorm internally and ask for ideas from outside our own bubble and improve things. And they didn't do it. You know, they just, we'll have a new stage and new ribbon lighting. And you're right, Tyler, when they're not at a glossy, modern, brand new arena, you know, maybe the lighting isn't as good. Maybe the lighting was great tonight. And if that carries over to every arena, great. But if that just is because of the arena they were in, there's going to be a big drop-off in this, quote, new era and new look. It's going to blend in really fast, especially with the fact that they stuck with the same song. And I don't have a strong opinion on keeping the same song, but if you are trying to establish a new era and a new look and a new vibe, you got to change the song. You know, that's part of making that kind of statement. So, you know, I was disappointed on a number of levels. This again, it felt like, you know, you a real estate website saying new kitchen, you know, new updated kitchen, and then the photos are of some old cabinets being painted and some bad granite being put on top of, you know, but they didn't change the flooring and it's just like, no, you got it. Don't go halfway with it. If you want to be major league, go all the way. All right, there's my rant. I'm done with my rant because it doesn't matter. It's not the biggest thing. There were more things on the show that mattered, but they built it up, and this was a chance to do a few other things that would have really made it seem like they lived up to the buildup, and they didn't. All right. Tom, back to you.
I feel like they did a good job doing all the guys from Seattle area. You had Swerve, Darby, and Brian get strong wins. Like, also, showing Chasing and Fusion Talent and Nick Wayne. But I feel like they got to give that guy and Swerve group a name because, like, Taz was, like, basically making fun of him all night. You feel like there's a way they can, like, do that faster, or what do you think the presentation of that group?
What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, well, it feels like, because even, like, the commentary team have not been kind of informed on what the plan is my guess, the way they talk about him and giving him, like, 17 different names throughout the match, during the Swerve match, and it feels like an overcorrection of like the critique that I think was pretty obvious when he premiered and the announce team had no idea who he was. And it made AEW look like less than from a production and planning standpoint. And it feels like now it's like, that's part of the character to justify that actually happening is my totally non-sourced opinion on what I think is happening here. But, you know, I guess if you want to spin it positively, whenever they name him, I guess that is something. But, like, I'd rather see him have his first match than him get a name because – unless it's like the coolest name of all time, I just don't think it's going to be a net positive. You know, if his name's Big Bill, oh no, it's already taken. Never mind. But besides that,
Tyler, pause. What you tried to do is come up with the most dumb generic name since Mr. JL, Mr. JL, and you came up with a name they actually used.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that was kind of the bit too. But thank you for making me think that. But yeah, so.
Could have played along.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, I got to be honest with the people here. So, but yeah, I think it's.
I appreciate it's, and resent your honesty.
There you go. I it's strange, I guess, is where I am, and I just don't think it's worth what they're doing. But you know, whatever. I guess it makes Swerve seem more mysterious than he is currently. So that could be the positive explanation.
By the way, I think Swerve Strickland, and Grant, you know, again, he had the crowd on his side, but hey, so be it. Because of the local angle, he seems like somebody who is clicking right now. Mm-hmm. Like if you're AEW, I think there's something there. You know, we talk about, you know, homegrown people or whatever. I mean, Swerve is a ex-WWE guy, but if they can turn him into a bigger star than he was in NXT, man, I mean, there is something there, and there always has been. And, you know, whatever it is that held him back, you know, if there was a perception he wasn't 100% in on wrestling, or there's an attitude thing or whatever, you know, and you hear things about different wrestlers and why they don't, you know, why management sort of doesn't get behind them. And sometimes you kind of relate. I relate. I'm like, oh yeah, I can kind of see why you'd push that person instead of this person based on what you tell me about, you know, their attitude or whatever. You know, and those things exist. And Tony Khan's finding that out firsthand with a variety of people, you know, that he hires who are considered underutilized by WWE. And then he experiences them in person. And he's like, oh, okay, I don't want to deal with this. I got other people I can push. Swerve is catching on right now in a way where, what you know, within reason, it's like, get behind him. Get something out of him. Like this, he is a contemporary, cool act that I think – is being presented effectively, or he's good in the ring, and there's potential to build upon better what they have with the Mogul affiliates. Is that right?
Yes.
Mogul affiliates, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a foundation here to build on, and in the ring, he seems to have a little bit of a swagger that I haven't – a more fully realized swagger than he's had before. There's always been that hint of it. It's really there now, and he's backing it up in the ring with a good match tonight. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I've always been a big Swerve guy. I didn't watch him a ton in NXT, to be fair, so I've seen 98% of him in AEW. So to me, he's kind of an AEW guy, which I think helps him, as you kind of laid out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah. Even tonight, like, him walking to the ring, they kind of remixed his entrance music, which I thought was good because I liked his entrance music, but it was kind of – it needed some, I don't know, just some music in the back of it because it was a little quiet for an arena. But – like him walking down with Boudreaux and Mystery Man number two, in my head, I'm like, man, this should be so lame. And this should be like a death sentence for a gimmick for somebody. And I just thought Swerve looked like, I thought I was like, man, this guy is so awesome. And, you know, just like as a fan, that's not really a good analysis by me, but like, yeah, that's there. And, you know, he's a heel and he's getting cheered and Seattle. Is that the greatest thing to do? No, but it's kind of early MJF stuff, right? It's him in Long Island and getting cheered. And it shows that he's over, and being over is more important early on than aligning with your character all the time. And MJF figured that out from you know, he's getting booed everywhere now, which is good. And I think Swerve is, you know, maybe if the plan is get the TNT title on, you know, a babyface and Swerve takes it from him, that's cool because obviously, you know, or just have like you laid out with Joe tonight, like have Hangman, have Moxley, have your other big baby faces take on Swerve in big pay-per-view matches that are just, you know, feuds and not for a made-up belt, not a brand-new belt for people to fight over and have it just be a good old-fashioned feud. I think Swerve could be invaluable for AEW in 2023 in that role.
All right, Don, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, you know, this is strange. You didn't mention Kenny U.S. title win tonight or anything about New Japan. I just feel like it's a little strange. I know they have a partnership. But besides, like, the ass boy segment, they did not mention it at all. You ever notice that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they should be. It doesn't jump out to me as, oh, we should be talking more about Wrestle Kingdom. Tyler, were you expecting more?
Well, you know, just I was watching Wrestle Kingdom this morning, and I was thinking, you know, okay, is this setting up for, you know, Kenny winning? Is this setting up a match for him at Forbidden Door 2 if that does happen? And I didn't get that feeling watching Wrestle Kingdom that they were doing anything for anything outside of New Japan. So I think if maybe that's the plan from a New Japan perspective, then AEW is not going to play ball and promote their stuff if it's not building to something that they can co-promote together. So I don't think it's like an absolute horrible thing, but it was interesting, I would say. It seems like Kenny is just more working a couple of days for New Japan as opposed to a true partnership. And, you know, Carl Anderson was on the show. He's a WWE guy currently. I mean, Bailey was backstage as well. So it's kind of a weird show where like every major company had somebody represented at that show. So I don't read too much into it. I think more if we are in April, May, and we're not really connecting Kenny's New Japan character with what's going on in AEW, then I think that's more of like a problem with the relationship.
By the way, we had a listener, Bradley, who was at the show at Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh,
and he said Ospreay got double the entrance pop of Omega. Sasha got zero response from the crowd. And he says everyone except him and another young fan close by were crazy for Okada. I'm not sure what his deal is with Okada. He said it was like half full. Lots of people were lined up to buy tickets the day of the show. And he says floor seats 20 rows back were under $100. He said it was amazing, although he ended up moving into the stands to be more comfortable and have a better view of the mat and floor action. He said he'd rather see shows at Cork and Hall than the Tokyo Dome next time he goes, which I've always thought Tokyo Dome doesn't look like a great place to see live wrestling. I mean, it's because of the history there, you know, you'd want to be there. But just as a viewing experience, you know, the hockey basketball arena is certainly preferable to the big dome in outdoor stadium shows. But anyway, it was kind of cool to have some on-site details there. Anyway, I'll throw back to Don for any closing words or another topic from him.
Yeah, I feel like it's strange that all the women are not getting together besides Britt and Jamie. Like, it's constantly – I feel like Tony's got one note with the women's division, and anybody else notice the same thing with Jay – Willow and Ruby last week. Hero's noticed it.
That there's only one segment per show? Again, there's a weird connection with us, so I couldn't quite make out what you said.
No, the idea that the women groups are not getting along with each other, like tag teams and stuff, is always like distrust between the teams.
That's a good – yeah. I mean, that's it's a little too Jerry Lawler. You know, Jerry always goes, women, they secretly hate each other. They all secretly hate each other. I mean, I think you should be self-aware if you're a booker that you're not always promoting women in alliances, just breaking up as soon as they get together. I think it's a problem that goes beyond women's divisions, and it happens, you know, just too often overall in pro wrestling where, we're together, now let's tease a breakup. Sometimes it's, and I know part of that is wrestlers pitching their own ideas because it's a way to get TV time. It's if you have something going, and if you don't have something like that going, then you might not get TV time. And it's up to the booker to make sure that's not the case. Sometimes it's just good to be a group and do your thing and not tease a breakup and not be part of some and not have internal strife, be part of your gimmick for an extended period of time before, you know, 4 months or 18 months, but somewhere in that range. And have the discipline to just establish yourself first, that eagerness to go to a breakup angle. And I know with like Jade and stuff, I think it had to do a little bit with injuries and then replacements and then let's, you know, set up a tag match. And part of it too is just wanting to keep angles within your clique or within your comfort zone group, which sometimes, you know, has happened in AEW. You know, we see it with Kenny and the Bucks just wanting to, you know, work with people they like and kind of being in their bubble, and Cody had the Codyverse, you know, it's just, that's been a thing with Tony Khan that it's sort of like wrestlers get to book themselves against people they like. And I mean, I've heard, you know, examples from people I talk to in AEW of, well, you won't see that match. You know, you're not going to see that match because those two, you know, don't want to work with each other. And it's kind of up to the booker to make sure that, you know, with rare exception when it's just called for because the heat is too strong or the chemistry will be too awful, that you don't let that happen. But anyway, I'm praying off a little bit, but when it comes to the women's division, there's so few women if you're Tony Khan, you want to make sure they don't just get completely separated into almost separate brands and separate universes, feuding with each other, because that can lead to you rushing angles and breakups of factions too. What do you think, Tyler, on what John brought up?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's also just a symptom of, you know, having one segment every episode of Dynamite. I think there's only one or two weeks throughout 2022 where there was more than one segment, more than one women's match on a Dynamite. And if you're going to have one match all the time, you're going to put more tag matches, more groups breaking up to get more people on TV. That just makes sense. You don't want to have a bunch of singles matches and have, hey, we have TV time and only two women are going to be in a match this whole week on you know, our biggest show. So having tag matches and groups break up to get everyone on TV is what you would do, but you can alleviate that by having, you know, two matches, you know, once a month or something to start small. And I think the roster is big enough and more and talented enough to tell stories like you have with a, you know, a Sheeta and a Serena Deeb having a, you know, a three match series that isn't for a title, but it's well worked and a good feud for TV and more things like that. Just more focus on that division for that, I think would alleviate that. But I think, yeah, they are all women, all the women in AEW kind of in that sort of zone of breaking up with their friends or feuding with another group of their friends is kind of all the stories going on currently.
Yeah. All right, Don, appreciate the call.
All right.
All right, cool. Connection was a little rough with Don, so apologize for that. We'll now go to Jay in Hartford. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, good evening, Wade. Happy New Year. How's it going?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Hey, same to you. So, Ricky Starks and Jericho in the opening match. Going into the match, you know, it's been advertised last week or maybe a couple weeks. I didn't really think much about it until the show started tonight. And I'm thinking, okay, well, neither of these guys can take a loss. And I thought there would be some sort of screwy finish. But I'm not really a fan of the finish that they did. I thought there was a bit much going on there with the whole distraction finish with 2.0. I was actually fine with Jericho winning, when he had the Lion Tamer or, Boston Crab, whatever. And then 2.0 distracted the ref, and then the other guy, like, knocked out Starks. That, to me, should have actually been the finish, because now that Ricky Starks has been Jericho, I don't see the need for another match where I'm now clamoring for Starks to get the victory, right? So with Jericho, they only have so many like established stars, you know, that are, you know, main event level. And like, you know, as far as Jericho, he may be the most well-known of the stars that they have, besides maybe arguably like Daniel Bryan or something, but Jericho's been around the longest. And so how many losses can he take before it doesn't really mean anything to beat Chris Jericho? So I'm just not really a fan of how they did that tonight. And then, you know, although Starks, I didn't really want to see him lose either. But again, now he's beating Jericho. So it's not like, oh, I want to see Ricky Starks beat Chris Jericho. He already beat him. The only thing I can see is, you know, maybe they head to a tag match with Starks and Action Andretti. But again, Action Andretti already beat Jericho. So I just feel like that was the wrong move tonight if the story is going to continue, because both guys have beaten Jericho one-on-one, and so we have the tag match. Them getting a victory in a tag match over JAS won't be as satisfying. So I don't know what you think about that, if you think they should have gone another way with Jericho winning, or if you think it doesn't matter, or kind of your take there.
Well, I will take for sure a babyface winning despite interference than a babyface winning because of interference or interference backfiring on the heel. Like, this was a case where Jericho had everything going for him and Stark still won clean. You know, he fended off Menard and Parker and then speared a charging Jericho. You can make the case, well, Jericho left himself vulnerable because he thought, you know, Starks was going to be distracted by Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, and he went to put himself in that vulnerable position. And he was caught by surprise. But I just think you're thinking too hard, or you know, overthinking it. If you're thinking that takes something away from Starks' win, I thought that was a good win for Starks because he not only beat Jericho, but he beat heels at ringside interfering on Jericho's behalf too. So it worked for me because I think they wanted to tell us, the viewer, Jericho's going to win because of shenanigans, because of interference. And it didn't happen. And it made Starks win in theory and I think in effect also more impressive. What did you think, Tyler? And then also, what do you think about Jericho just losing too often lately where it might start to mean less?
Yeah, no, I was a fan of it. And for the two reasons, right? Starks getting the win here showed that he is a babyface that is at a different level right now within AEW. And, you know, after he lost to MJF, he said on a promo that, you know, next time I'm going to get you, basically, and I'm going to take that title off of you. And you know, if you were to project out from here and you're at the end of 2023, like if Starks continues this trajectory, he's a guy that I could see taking the belt off of MJF later down the line as an epic rematch of, you know, he got screwed over in at the end of 2022, and that's the story you can tell. So that's a win because he's getting protected as a babyface more than most people do. And, you know, just to have that and have that choice with any character, I think is a positive and run with that. And then the second thing that's working for me, and I think working in general, is Jericho losing is all for a good reason. He's not just losing and now we think, okay, this guy's a washed up bum. I mean, we do as a people watching the show, and I think 2.0 being part of this, and them being kind of bumbling idiots and that being the story. And it looks like Jericho and now JAS with him are kind of crumbling and they're not on the top of the hill like they were 6 months ago. And what is the Jericho character? What is JAS going to do? Is Daniel Garcia going to finally break away from Jericho? And that's why they did that. Now they're going to tell that story between those two. So I'm intrigued while he's losing and going down. What is the future for Jericho, and also building up someone like a Ricky Starks in a positive way is all positive for me. And, you know, I also don't think that when I watch this, I don't get the feeling that I need to see Ricky Starks and Jericho have another match. It feels like Action Andretti and Jericho have more beef that they need to settle. And yeah, the tag match would be fine, but I actually think like Starks moving on to something else is more likely to happen. And AEW typically doesn't do, you know, Starks Jericho 3 within a 6 month period. Now they certainly have done it, but yeah, that's more of a, you know, definitely if this is WWE, that would be their booking pattern, but AEW is a little more, I don't know, up and down on that technique. And Jericho's obviously more aligned with that WWE style. You know, look at his feud with Orange Cassidy in the past where they kind of had three matches and Jericho won the middle one, I think, but lost overall and put Cassidy over. So, I just don't think him and Starks are going to continue their story in a one-on-one fashion, at least. But I could be wrong on that as well. I just don't get that feeling after this episode that it will happen. So, you know, if they do and they have another match and Jericho gets his win back, then I'll be less positive on this. But as of right now, I think it's been pretty smartly booked.
And it's possible, too, Jericho's going to lose as a heel quite a bit before he turns babyface, and it doesn't matter because when you turn and you're a fan favorite and it's the right turn, it's like hitting the reset button on your, not your credibility, but fan interest in seeing you wrestle. And it really, I mean, Jericho had his run as world champ. He's not – that was pushing it, and he came through, and it was good. But, you know, this isn't the Jericho of a dozen years ago or 20 years ago. I mean, it's fine if he's more of a legacy star role player and losing, especially if the idea is he's going to turn babyface. You don't want to turn him too much, but or too quickly, I would even argue, and maybe only get one more turn in his career that's going to matter at all. But that might be what's on their mind too. Jay, back to you.
All right, I appreciate that from you both. It just struck me as.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know at one point, Ricky Starks, you know, maybe last week, whenever, he said something about, you know, my boy or my buddy, Action Andretti, which, of course, was like, wow, they're friends. This guy just got here. But, like, the way he said it just made me think, like, they were leading to a tag match when Andretti came back. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. But I do like what they're doing with Ricky Starks. I'll say that. I was... I was happy with the victory because one thing I'll say about Starks Wade, and I have one more topic I'd like to bring up, but one thing about Ricky Starks is when he, as over as he is, and I enjoy his work, and he was just great on the mic, especially opposite MJF a few weeks back before the title match, but I actually didn't think he, as weird as this is going to sound, I didn't think he was ready for that spot. Because, you know, if you go back, I don't know, like a year, however many months, he was a heel, and then he cut that promo about, I'm the star and I should be on TV or something, and he turned face. And then I just didn't think he was ready for a main event, you know, title match. And obviously he wasn't going to win, right? That was pretty, I think, well understood that he wouldn't win the title. But I just felt like he was thrown into the spot too soon. And so now that he lost the match, I like that he was able to beat someone like Jericho, which now keeps him, you know, or helps us as the fans to see him as a main event level player. And the next time, and one thing that I really liked about after the loss was the promo that he cut, talking about, you know, I will be back, you know, in the next time or what have you. So, you know, looking at it from that angle, I am pleased that he got the victory. I just hope that this feud, that there's enough legs still with the faces having beaten Jericho already like multiple times. So, but yeah, I'll go to another topic and then I'll let you guys go. Hangman and Moxley, and Wade, you've gone on for weeks about like how it, you know, this is wrestling. This is what happens. Like, why is Hangman so upset that he got knocked out? and they finally addressed it somewhat. But it seemed maybe a little too late, or it still didn't come across as clean. So it made Hangman a little more whiny. Like, I prefer Hangman had said, you know, hey, it's not that you knocked me out. It's that you made light of it. And he somewhat said that, but the phrasing and the way he basically said, you told a joke. And it reminded me of when he got upset about being called kid. And I like Hangman Page, but just the, I don't know, the cadence or something about the way that he addressed it tonight, it just didn't work for me. It was like, you know, again, I don't know if it just came across as him trying to save face.
No,
I don't know if you see where I'm going with this, but it just didn't, you were right all along as, you know.
I do, no.
You're supposed to get knocked out in wrestling, but it just didn't work for me tonight the way they tried to explain it. Which is how they should have tried to explain it weeks ago. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just didn't.
No, it totally does. I want to get Tyler's thoughts on this, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. It did come across like, oh, we realized this was bad, so now let's have the babyface claim all along he wasn't upset over what everyone thought he was upset about and what was implied in the storyline, but it was something else that we can retroactively claim is what he was upset about. And yeah, it was a problem all along. How do you think they did Tyler on this? Did it come across as trying to fix an unforced error?
Yeah, I mean, the word I would use is clunky. And I'd say that was from the very beginning of the promo where Paige was like, I thought he said, like, I'm not going to be wrestling next week. I was like, oh, cool. The show's so packed next week, they're going to push this to the Dynamite after to keep, you know, Dynamite, you know, main events strong for weeks on end. And then, you know, he explained like, but if I get on that red eye, I can get a brain scan and whatever. And then Excalibur kind of covered for him on what he meant. It was like very, very clunky from the beginning, which is not a good sign. And then, you know, he was in there with Moxley, and it was just kind of like it was just a dichotomy of someone with really good wrestling promo instincts in Moxley, as he always is, and I always say it. And then someone with like kind of pretty bad wrestling instincts for your character in Hangman Page, and it just kind of, you know, he kind of showed himself in that, and I think he's done that every time here. And you know, I like Page's intensity. I think he's always brought in that. And if you didn't speak English and you saw these two interact, you'd be like, oh, I got to see this. Dude, they're going to kill each other. This is awesome. But you know, if you actually listen to the words and dissect it, it's not, you know, super compelling on Page's end. I think Moxley did a good job of saying I'm going to kill you without saying I'm going to kill you, which is always, you know, the Scott Hall school of promos. He passed that test. So I think it was just that to me. Like it was too little too late on a Hangman promo to explain this. Like I personally don't really care his motivation. Like I think it was an AEW trying to over explain what they're fighting for. Like if you're a human being and someone knocked you out and you are in a profession where you can fight each other, I can see why you want to fight that person again, right? It's pretty standard human nature to, like, you know, not get revenge, yeah, but, you know, get your win back, whatever. And they could have, yeah, done a much cleaner job of telling the story and not make it, you know, I think, and that's probably the Hangman input here, is he wants to make things, you know, more real, more about his character, who's like nuanced and thoughtful and things like that. But, you know, you can have an idea, then we get out there, it just kind of gets muddled. And, you know, I've done that many times on a live show. I think Wade knows that greatly. We're trying to make a good point, and then you kind of get in the middle of it and you kind of lose focus. And then you're like, you get back and you're like, oh, well, I didn't really make the point I wanted to make. So that sucks. But, you know, I'm not on national TV either. So I feel for Paige, but it just kind of always is the same story. So there's my kind of long answer for you.
Tyler, are you going to get to a point there? No, I'm kidding. no, well said. And this just gets to the problem of two baby faces fighting too. Mm-hmm. Like I think character's better when he's got the moral high ground and he's not whiny. And he just wants to go out and kick ass and stack up wins and show up heels who have bad attitudes and yeah, I mean, just show good guys can win. And same with Moxley. I would much rather Moxley aim his polished biting promos at somebody who you want to get torn down. And so I just, that's save face matches for when it's a dream match and you're going to make money on it on a pay-per-view and it's an exception, not the rule. But otherwise, stay away from it. And you know, this was a special situation in the sense that they didn't plan for the knockout, but it did get them into an unforced predicament. And yeah, if Hangman had come out and just walked into the ring and said, Mox, you got me, and you got me so good, he stopped the match. That doesn't happen very often. And you know, it happens to the best of us. But let me have a rematch. I want to finish what we started. You might think you finished it, but I think we got more fighting to do. I mean, it's just be a better sport about it. Yeah. Anyway, Jay, back to you. Anything you want to add to that or anything else?
Yeah, no, totally. And now Moxley comes across as, like you said, he did a good job of saying, I'm going to kill you without using those words. But now it's like, why do you really want to hurt Hangman so bad? Just because, like, you know, so now it's like, well, you're mad, you're whining that I knocked you out, and now I'm going to really knock you out. And if you notice, like, the crowd actually booed when Moxley said, I'm going to make sure you don't get up or something. I'm like, the whole thing is just, that was a good word, Tyler, clunky, like the promo, and just, I'm ready to move on from this story. And wait, I don't like the face-to-face in this case. You know, when it's for a title or when there's more of a you know, more meat to the story, something that makes sense. But this face-to-face thing in this situation is just not working for me. And it reminds me, and this is, I don't know, it's totally going off track, but the whole Blackpool Combat Club, like, yes, Moxley is a face, but it just kind of took me back to when Moxley was feuding with Bryan Danielson. Danielson was a face. He became a heel for the feud. And then and I thought he was being like this sarcastic heel going, hey, no, let's work together. You know, like maybe trying to, you know, sucker Moxley in, but then they actually started teaming together. And I'm like, well, are they a face team or a heel team? And then Blackpool Combat Club was born. And I don't know, it's just AEW and Bryan Danielson, you know, he's good. You know, I think he tries to make sure that his character is presented consistently and that his turns make sense, but none of that was smooth. So like AEW, they're just not, they don't handle their, I don't know, their faces and heels or face turns well. And the face matchups, things like that, you know,
yeah,
in the grand scheme of things, if it's just, it's more than just the good wrestling matches. You have to pay more attention to the consistency of how the characters are presented. So I'll leave it at that. But thanks for taking my call tonight, Wade. Thanks, Tyler.
Cool. Thanks, Jay. Good. Thanks for calling. Anything you want to say to that, Tyler?
No, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, what Jay's laying out is kind of the pro is why what WWE excels in versus AEW. And then obviously the work rate is what AEW, you know, that's not like a transcendent statement, but you know, I think if both tried a little harder on doing what the other one does best, I think both companies would be better for it. And I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. All right. I want to get some emails here. I want to start with Ken in I don't know where Ken is. Ken B goes, evening, Wade. A month or two back, after the episode where Jeff Jarrett debuted, I wrote a long, scalding email about how off-track and dangerously TNA-ish AEW is becoming. ROH was the main focus. There were 1,000 titles on every episode, and the wrong guys were being pushed at the expense of the fresh talent that originally differentiated AEW from WWE. With that said, it's only fair then to come back and compliment AEW when the direction feels spot on, and tonight's episode brought us there. Big showcase wins for AEW's homegrown talent, like Darby Allin, Ricky Starks, and the Acclaimed. We also got really strong segments from AEW originals like Hangman Page, Britt Baker, and MJF, and build for big matches next week featuring AEW originals like Jungle Boy, Hook, The Elite, and Death Triangle. Compelling wrestlers who haven't been overexposed in other promotions like Swerve and Action Andretti, he typed Andretti, easy mistake, got an opportunity to shine as well, but I had to throw him under the bus. It wasn't me. Older, non-homegrown talent like Jeff Jarrett, Sting, Samoa Joe, Jay Lethal, and even Chris Jericho were used to smartly put over the next generation talent, not vice versa like we've seen too much in prior months. AEW is a primary focus, not ROH, not TNA, not AAA, not New Japan, and the major AEW titles got the majority of the focus. Great stuff, and exactly what AEW needs to slowly start building momentum again, leading up to negotiations for their next television deal. Happy New Year. Go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Ken. Go VIP, everyone. Tyler, how important is that and was today when Excalibur talked about this being kind of a new era? Is that more than a new ring apron that I'm hung up on? Or exterior shots to the arena to set the scene like everybody else does? Is that more important, and is that actually was that more important, and are we reading too much into it tonight? The finishes, might it be happenstance, and we're going to be let down in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say that it's more of the aesthetic is what the new era is, and in a new year, new AEW is probably like the mindset and some sort of corporate rebranding that they're doing. But you know, because I think these changes happens, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, it really started to turn a corner. I try and always judge my thoughts on AEW on, you know, me on the post show here. I'm here, you know, every 4 weeks or so, something like that. And there's like two appearances ago, I think I was saying what Ken said on his email verbatim, or either here or on my report, where I said, you know, AEW is like on some late stage TNA content throughout parts of the show, and it's not working at all. And I've been very pro the show the last month, you know, 6 weeks. So I'm aligned with him on those thoughts. And so, you know, if you want to say, hey, the December part of booking is part of the new era, as well as the presentation here, then yeah, that can be a whole, a holistic new era of AEW. And, you know, things like that, how you interact with your employees, things like that, change over time. You don't just like hit a switch and like, okay, all you WWE bums are out and all my AEW, you know, original guys are going to win forever now. Like, that's not always going to be the case. Things are going to change. If Adam Cole can come back, like, he's going to be a prominent player and things like that. It's not just always going to be WWE guys are forever now jobbing out to homegrown talent, because then people will complain about that as well. But I do think there has been a conscious effort to pivot and improve on what had been some pretty low hanging fruit. And that's, I think, a positive of AEW, and always has been. Of if there are major issues, it doesn't go on forever in perpetuity, like, you know, some Vince McMahon style decisions he was doing for years and years and years, just because there is no reason for him to change. I think that's the one pro of Tony Khan still, is that he will change things when needed. And I think this has been a good example of that the last couple of weeks.
Yes. All right. Up next, Albert says, Happy New Year from New York City. Wade and Tyler, is Sheeta turning heel? Will Sheeta align with Britt and Hayter as AEW originals? To me, Saraya is a natural heel, not a baby face. And also, why no updates whatsoever on the status of Adam Cole? So first of all, AEW just doesn't like giving out medical updates on wrestlers. And I don't know if they are like, they feel they're not allowed to, or it's no one's business, but if the wrestler gives permission, do it and do it sooner. And, you know, I think fans deserve an answer to what happened to, you know, even if you just say upper body injury, like the NHL does, you know, I mean, that's fine, but don't just act like, well, they're dead to us now. Cause that's what it comes across to me as a viewer. Oh, Hangman Page got hurt last week. We had to stop a match midstream. The show came to a halt, and then they don't talk about him. except on social media, you know, in a, one post that you may or may not have seen. That just makes it seem like the promotion is just get out the broom or the shovel and get them off the stage so we can move the next performer out here. And it seems crass. And I don't think what they're going for. I mean, I'm quite confident that's not what they're going for, but that's how it comes. I think it comes across that way to me. Or it just comes across as if they're trying to hide something, or they're just not paying attention to the curiosity of fans. And sad, maybe most of all, they just assume everybody is on Twitter as much as Tony Khan is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a fair critique, and they should be updating people. It doesn't mean we don't need Cody Rhodes videos on Adam Cole's comeback. You know, Seth Rollins workout videos like when 6 years ago, whatever that was. But yeah, I'd like more updates. Do you agree with that, Tyler?
Yeah, but I think you got to do it from the start, right? Like if they started it now with Adam Cole, if they gave an update of like, hey, we don't really know, he had a concussion, let's say, and we don't know what's going to happen, then that. This late in the game, that would make me think as a fan, like, oh, cool, he's coming back soon. And, at this point, it's on the company for disappointing fans and releasing that when they chose to release it. If they did it, sooner after it happened, I think, and having that be a policy would be better, right? Same thing with CM Punk. Like, you don't know if he's coming back for many reasons, but he tore his tricep, and that is a, 9 to 12-month injury. So if that was at least stated of like, hey, tricep injury out at least 12 months. And then if you see him again, you do, if you don't, you don't, sort of thing. But yeah, it would make sense. And make it seem like the talent are not just, bags of meat for Tony Khan to make money on, which I agree is not, I think, the AEW culture, but it does seem that way if you don't track it.
Yeah. Yep. Saraya definitely comes across to me as a natural heel. Mm-hmm. The way she talks, it was like when Christian showed up. And I was critical of Christian Cage by going, when I walk backstage, all the wrestlers look to me for veteran sage advice. It's like, shut up. Even if that's true, you don't say that if you're trying to be a babyface. Get over yourself. And then he turned heel and did the same thing, and it worked, for him. And he didn't have to change much about his attitude. And yeah, Saraya, it's like, get over yourself. Oh, when I walked in here, I see all these women and I didn't know what to expect, but now I'm going to give them their dream, which is the endorsement from me that they belong on television and they're talented. And it's like, get over yourself. Her presentation of her opinion, it's like everybody's just waiting for the great Saraya to show up. I'm sorry, if it was Becky Lynch, bring it on. If it was Stone Cold Steve Austin, bring it on. If Austin talked like Christian did, even if Moxley kind of did, I'd be okay with it because they're true top tier talent. Christian was next level. Good. He had a good career. Not dissing what he accomplished, but he's not the guy who as a babyface can just walk in and go, everyone was looking to me for sage advice. It's like, come on, you're in a locker room full of people who have accomplished a lot, including some who have had better careers than you. So with Saraya, she carries herself like she's accomplished and done more than she has. And it sounds like, oh, I'm ripping on her. And I'm not. I'm just saying she projects herself as something more than she is, and it's off-putting. And if it's intended to be heelish and that's where she's going, hey, it's working. But if it's not, then that's my observation. That's my take on it. What do you think of what Al had to say and what I had to say, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think just naturally some people are better playing heels. I think, Jack Perry is probably going to fall in that boat too if he doesn't have someone to bounce off of. I think that is why he continues to get partners, because we've seen that in his promos where he has that same sort of streak in him of, yes, that character is a babyface character, but he just kind of comes off as a heel, even though he might be the nicest guy in the world. So, she's breaking up groups of people within AEW, which we talked about is kind of everyone's story right now in AEW, but she's taking baby faces, making them, probably attack each other. So they're out of matches. And then there's going to be another person in Mercedes. If we can extrapolate and assume that, you don't think in character Saraya would be jealous that someone else bigger than her from the company she came from is not going to, make her the number two free agent available within the company. And then she can also use the, if MJF, that heel work works and she can wrestle, six times a year and feel like a big deal and use that as a heel tactic as opposed to a Undertaker wrestling two times a year tactic, then I think that can work for her as well. But yeah, she's just so easily a much better heel on screen than a babyface, and that's totally fine. I think CM Punk's the same one. So
yes. All right. JB from Detroit. I thought it was a good idea to have Hangman clarify that it wasn't that he got knocked out by Mox that upset him, but it was the fact that Mox immediately made a joke of it. It's what we've been asking for, and they addressed it in one simple go-home promo. Better late than never, as they say. Even if we critiqued that they could have done it better, and even if we think they shouldn't have made this on first air to begin with, we called for the correction, and they made it, and I think it is, you know, it would be big of us as much as any of them care to say, hey, credit to them. I mean, you know, even if you can't clean up the mess perfectly, I think they did address the issue, and they absolutely get more points for that than points deducted for it seeming a little transparent, like they're trying to make something up after the fact. Number two, the way that Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter kept highlighting the idea that they are AEW originals and homegrown talents, and that's what separates them from Saraya, does make me think Saraya's partner will be from outside the company to continue to be the contrast. The natural conclusion for many is that her partner will be the newly minted Mercedes Moné after her debut at Wrestle Kingdom and with AEW New Japan's working relationship. If Mercedes was going back to WWE, I think she would have performed as Sasha Banks at Wrestle Kingdom. My only hesitation is that I would have thought AEW wouldn't have dropped more specific subtle hints as they did with Punk's debut, so they could unofficially advertise their debut as the ratings pop. I think there's a word, but I think he meant they would have, not wouldn't. I think he meant would have, not wouldn't, that they would have dropped more specific hints. What do you think about that? Tyler, do you think it's obvious to most people or only podcast listeners / Twitter people, website people, that, hey, you better tune in because you're going to see this, like, someone who's a much bigger star than Saraya, with all due respect to Saraya, because it's not like a big drop. Well, I said a much bigger star. Sasha Banks is a much bigger star than Saraya in WWE and overall, and that's a big deal. Do you think they should do more hints like they did with Punk?
Well, I'm curious. You can answer this if you want to, but I wonder what you think, you know, let's say a million people, right, are watching AEW consistently. Like, what percentage of those people to you are, you know, pretty locked in and kind of know that Mercedes is likely to be here next week on the show? And then before you answer that, like, also Britt Baker did say she was the boss tonight. So that's like a pretty huge cue to me if you are a wrestling fan in general, that obviously that is not being said and being kept in without any sort of notice. That to me was like the CM Punk level of announcement without announcing it. So, you know, cause I think that number's pretty high of like people that are pretty locked in out of that million, or that million that someone in their life is pretty locked in and be like, hey, you watch Dynamite twice a month, but you got to watch this one. This one's going to be huge because Sasha Banks is going to be there. It's kind of the text someone's getting, right? So I think it's big, but, you know, again, if you want to answer that, you can. But I would say at least 40% of the AEW fan base is pretty locked in to the wrestling culture online, if I had to guess.
Yes, and what you want is that percentage to drop as your audience grows.
Yeah.
I mean, in a big picture, it doesn't really affect the specific point we're talking about. Yeah. Okay. JB also says, it was a good idea to have MJF stand against Danielson and Samoa Joe face Darby in their home state to get that proper reaction. As sometimes stereotypical cool heels, it was good to see MJF and Joe get legitimate heel heat. Hopefully this can help set the tone for them to get the proper boost as we move forward. He added in a follow-up email, it was on the same topic. It was also good that Danielson didn't let MJF steamroll him with demands and got his own compromise in negotiations by getting under MJF's skin and getting him to agree to the potential Iron Man match at Revolution. Made him look like a smart baby face and heel MJF look thin-skinned and emotional. He sent that 2 hours ago right after the segment aired, so he's not parroting what we said earlier, but great minds think alike, JB, and we made some other points as far as that goes. I do like the alignment. I hope we get more of heels being heels and faces being faces, and they see the mess that got created with some of the things that they've done with ambiguous characters that I argue leads to ambivalence with crowds more so than just taking the easy route, which is heel-face matchups, you know, 19 out of 20 times. And everything just works out better. It's pro wrestling. Come on. You know, Succession or Breaking Bad. It's just like, just keep it. It's more West Wing. There's good guys and there's bad guys, and tell the damn story. Keep it simple. Tyler, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like a superhero movie, right? There was one superhero movie this year where one of the previous heroes was a villain, and it kind of was muddled and not well received, right? So I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, that was one of them. And like, yeah, it's just, look at tonight. Like, we are universally praising the opening and closing matches because they're baby faces versus heels very clearly. And then the one that was a little dicey was the one with two faces. And, you know, it just kind of is if you do that more often than not, that's going to be the case, that there's more to critique when you leave gray area across the board. So yeah, just, you know, if you have one or two of those stories at a time, totally fine. But most of them should be, you know, baby faces, heels, and telling good stories in that way.
My last theory after watching the final Saraya segment is that Sheeta will jump Tony Storm before the match to turn heel next week out of jealousy for Saraya choosing Tony, and Mercedes will come out to make the save as Saraya's partner. Man, JB just, you know, now I feel like he's going to think we copied him. She sent it before her show started.
Yeah.
Let me think here, because I want to wrap. I just looked at how long we've been going here, and wow. Time flew by. Is there anything, either Tony Nese did a good job in a short match. That's the right way to use Tony Nese. I will argue they didn't overbuild the match. Tony Nese is good in the ring, but he should be losing in under 4 minutes to someone like Danielson, and he shouldn't get mic time leading up to it. It should just be, he should just be there to lose. And that's what they did. So I like that. Yeah, jump in if there's anything else you want to bring up. I don't think we talked much about Jade Cargill and what they did there.
Yeah, that was the only thing I think we didn't talk about. But, you know, that was the most, I think, easy thing to, if you're watching weekly, that's obviously just setting up a match for Jade to get to win number 48 or 49 whenever they do it. And I think win 50 is important, but they really could have, you know, gone crazy and have, you know, Red Velvet lose on purpose tonight to give Jade her first loss, and that would have been super interesting. But I don't think that would be valuable in the long run. But, you know, I'm curious, like, of all the things, like MJF's title run, I bet Tony has that mapped out fairly well. I just feel like with Jade, there's really not a great plan for who's going to take that belt or then get that victory against her. And I hope it's someone that kind of is on the come up and not just, you know, Mercedes or Saraya or Britt or Jamie or someone that, like, that's already established. But it feels like that's a long way away, and I don't think that's super great for Jade or for the division. For her to be in a pocket universe like that, I'd rather her be facing big stars and having big matches than this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. How about the Guns talking about FTR and the entrance theme? Anything you want to add to that? Are you okay with the Guns getting this kind of TV time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're okay. They've put in their dues of doing like a lot of kind of stuff on Rampage and being, you know, getting over as the Ass Boys and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, if this is a way for FTR to come back and get a win, that would be, I think, good and a good use of them. And this is a way for them to get heel heat while FTR aren't there. So I think just logistically, it was a pretty smart way to do it. And I thought it was, you know, an interesting way. AEW does not typically do stuff like this, especially unannounced, unpromoted stuff. So if they did that kind of on the fly because they had 5 minutes to fill, I think that's even more impressive. But let me know, Wade, if that was the case, if you can figure that out.
Yep. I think that is all I've got on tonight's show. Anything else, Tyler?
Nope, I think we covered it all.
Cool.
But yeah, I think we both agree. Yeah, good show. I thought it was a little, just a slight down than previous weeks. But again, I thought the show's been pretty strong for, you know, a good 4 to 6 weeks at this point.
Yeah, yeah. This, I think if this was meant to set the tone for the year and acknowledge some things that they want to do from a booking philosophy standpoint, it's good sites for where AEW is headed. It helps me get past my disappointment with the visual makeover and the lack of many of the things that I hope that they might do, including changing the way that they hype upcoming matches. I thought it would be nice if we saw the end of Excalibur's breathless bead plugs. But all right, very good. Thanks, Tyler, and thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers and emailers and everyone, and we'll talk to you all next time.